Welcome to the Effective Engineering Manager podcast.
Hello, Adam. It's your time today. Here we are discussing one of the most popular topics in the engineering, agile.
Yes, Slava, that's correct. There's so much for us to discuss with regards to agile. Everyone has undoubtedly heard about it or is practicing it to some degree. But our focus in this episode is to start with some of the very practical, not necessarily academic, foundational suggestions for engineering managers to build and run effective agile teams. We know there's so much out there on agile. You can read every book, you can talk to a lot of people, but oftentimes that is philosophy and that doesn't necessarily translate into things you can actually be doing in real world tomorrow. And so we want to focus on really drilling down into those basic foundational best practices and go from there. And then we'll certainly have more episodes talking about agile as we move forward. But this will be a good starter. To get started, how has your experience with agile been over the years?
So yes, I have started unofficially even before that was it was called agile. And at that time, I think I was at WebLogic at BAE Systems, and we were doing iterative development. We were doing unit tests, short iterations. We were still releasing, doing large Big Bang releases, because those were actually times when we were burning CDs, right, and shipping actual product, right. But the fundamentals were already there, and it was around 2000, and basically, when I joined, it was really, I think, pretty much everything I've learned as an engineer that started my career in the United States. It was just this 1 year at BEA, and we had everything. We had unit testing, we had continuous integration, we had CI tests that would break if performance degraded because we were building a server, right? Lots of things were already there around 2000. But then I think what happened is the extreme programming movement started, and the core foundation, you know, small teams, you know, don't plan too far away, ship into customer hands in short iterations. Then it was something around, I would say, 2003, 4, 5, something like this.
Yeah, similar. I think, you know, I've built and rebuilt many agile teams, and same thing. I've been to a lot of, you know, agile conferences and spoke with a lot of agile evangelizers and whatnot. And, you know, you get really excited and, you know, read books and say, I'm going to go start this tomorrow with the team. And then you find out that even though you have good practices in place, like, you know, like you said, CI, unit testing, good code, best practices, and, you know, your team is generally pretty bright and productive, doesn't necessarily mean you can just switch, turn the switch on agile tomorrow and be, you know, productive and kind of get all the benefits out of it. So, I mean, I've had great experience. One thing I've learned is that, you know, you really have to listen to the team. I mean, that's really going to be your barometer for success. And don't try to make it academic. Don't try to force fit something onto the team. You're dealing with, you know, humans. You're dealing with situations. You're dealing with organizational dynamics. Oftentimes, you have an agile team working in a waterfall, world. Or a larger, you know, the outer organization is waterfall and your team might be doing agile. So everything is very much dependent on those factors. And it really affects your ability to be successful. I mean, I've seen some managers or scrum masters go in there and try to build a team, and they understand agile very well, and they may even understand their team very well, but they don't do a good job of translating the organizational culture to their team and vice versa, right? So it often seems like their team is just standing out as this kind of anomaly team that none of the executives or upper level management can understand. They really, you know, they say, well, just tell us when you're going to be done. We need to put a schedule together, or, you know, we need to see this or that. So, you know, those are real world challenges that you don't get away from. And I think unless you're in a very, very pure, 100% pure software environment where, you know, even maybe even a startup or a company where you have a lot of leverage, you're not necessarily going to be able to just be pure agile, right? Because you're either not going to have like a real product owner, or you're really not going to have, you know, a real roadmap. It's going to be very fluid. And what people care most about always is bottom line. And they want to, you know, they want to have confidence in that and reducing risk. So you can't, it's, you know, as much as you want to do agile and as much as we all believe in it and we know the benefits, getting it to work effectively is not just about following the book. And there's plenty of things that affect that. So I think some of the things we'll talk about today are hopefully things that really are practical and can work in whatever environment you're in.
Yes, this is great because there are great books. This point, enormous amount of presentations, resources, and everything. And at the same time, making it practical and sharing our experiences, which we have now after so many years of doing agile, like you just mentioned, like doing a buy-in, for example, getting a buy-in from management, right? From the senior leadership is very important, right? Some very rare and lucky cases, teams get it automatically when leadership comes and says, well, this is how we're going to do it. We already bought in, so we just have to implement. But I think providing, sharing our practical advice is going to be a great thing here. So let's get into this a bit more. And can you tell us more about some really foundational practices for Agile?
Sure. So let's get into it. So some of the foundational practices that we're going to talk about here today are things that should make sense and should be adaptable to any environment. And I think really will accelerate how well you can at least be moving within an agile world. So the first really being around estimation. I think you can't get away with doing agile without understanding the value of estimation and recognizing that it takes a long time to become proficient at it. So first about estimation, why is it so important? Because if your team, if the agile team cannot estimate reliably well, you have this domino effect. You have sprints end, you have technical debt folding into the next sprint, you're missing deadlines, you're playing catch up, you know, you're kind of chasing your tail and kind of going back into a brute force mode because you're not planning well up front. And your plan for the sprint becomes almost invalidated on day one once you get started, because if you don't estimate a particular story or task or something well enough, if it's too large, if it's too broad, if it's too ambiguous, it's very difficult to be successful, right? It's very difficult to match your definition of done in that 2 or 3 week sprint cycle. And so what happens is you put that story on your board, and a day or two into the sprint, you're already behind and you kind of forget to track. So your habits break down immediately because your estimation is not good, right? And again, it's this domino effect. You get close to the end of the sprint or to the end of the sprint and it's not done. You have to either make dynamic decisions in real time, what you're going to do. Are you going to throw more people on it? Or, you know, how much are you going to abandon your plan to achieve that, right? And anytime you have something that fundamentally breaks down agile, it's obviously a problem. So estimation is important. And we'll get into that a little bit more. We maybe even have a separate podcast just on estimation alone, but understanding the value of it and taking the time up front and being conservative is okay. I mean, it's okay to say, man, we just don't know if this is going to be able to fit in the sprint. Fine, split it. You know, you're better off getting less done correctly than attempting to be ambitious and do more and not getting that done because of the cost for that. The other thing with estimation is, and this is a very practical, experiential thing that I've learned, is most engineers really don't, and like any human, I think, but in general, engineers don't really understand how to plan ahead. They are very good at kind of in their mind understanding, okay, I know I have to write this amount of code. I know I have to do this. I know I have to do that. But stitching that together with testing and whatever else you need for definition of done often is not in the DNA of engineers, you know, kind of having a plan. They kind of know how to be technically proficient usually. And also you're dealing with a wide range of people with experience, right? In the team. I mean, a junior level developer doesn't have a lot of reference points for that, right? And you know, they're building things, they're learning at the same time. It's going to take them years even to get, it's going to take them 5+ years to even know, oh wow, you know, okay, this type of thing takes me about this long, right? So it's kind of this chicken and egg thing in a way as well, that the engineers don't really know, aren't really experienced on estimation. They are not managers, so they're not, you know, visible often to what's happening above them and what the context for some things are, right? They're relying on that being passed down to them. And the other thing is, you know, engineers have a mindset that, okay, we'll just pull all-nighters or whatever till we get it done, right? It's this kind of groupie mentality that, you know, we'll just kind of brute force our way through it. Or if, you know, if I know that I have a piece of code that's just not working, right, I'm intrigued to fix it. I'm intrigued to spend whatever I need to do to get it done. So we fall into these bad habits, and that affects, you know, it doesn't, having people work 24 hours a day throughout the sprint is not the goal, right? The goal is to say, hey, this is a 2-story point story and it should get done within, you know, whatever the average velocity for my team is for 2 story points, right? And that consistency is important. So estimation planning up front is very important. We'll get into more about how we can do better with that in other.
Yeah, like I said, I think it's maybe one of the most important topics, right? Because even though we are releasing something every 2 weeks, right, at the end of each sprint, we still need some sort of a predictability, right? And we need to know whether what we are going to be doing going to be done or not, right? And estimation is very, it's maybe one of the most important skills, right? Because the rest we can cover with processes, right? And so my experience installing Agile and Scrum and some variations of iterative development was exactly the same, right? Especially with junior folks and even with senior staff, right? They get a writer's block, literally. Like you say, hey, how long do you think it's going to take, right? During, for, let's say, first sprint planning meetings, right? And they just freeze, right? Because I think it's fundamentally the source of that writer's block is people are afraid to give estimates, right? Because the moment you give an estimate, it becomes real, and then there's a concern that you're going to be held accountable for. And I think as a part of installing agile processes on with the team, it's very important to communicate that, hey, be pessimistic. Don't worry if it's off, on and off too much, but let's just come up with something real quick and later we'll learn and adjust, right? And what I have seen, especially with junior folks and training them, they just say, I don't know. I just cannot tell. I've never done it before. I don't know. And then what I've done, this technique, and like you said, I think it's a great opportunity to talk about it in a separate podcast, but just some simple practical suggestion, right? Ask them a very simple thing. Imagine your day, right? Start putting on paper. You have started your day, you have went to the kitchen, you gotten your coffee, you sat down at the computer, you coded a bit, then you wrote unit tests and your tests, then you did some debugging. Roughly, create a mini plan for the day, right? Or for the tasks that you're going to be taking on. And then put, you know, look at it. Hey, how hard is it, right? We say that 1-story point is something very simple. 2-story points, a bit more complicated, et cetera, et cetera. Yes, so that's really just starting with something, and then trying to break it into a smaller pieces is that what I've learned works, especially with junior stuff.
Yeah, excellent points. It's so true. You know, and there's another phenomenon that goes along with that that I think is unique to software engineers is what I call the rabbit hole syndrome. So, you know, we all start with a story and we say, oh, wow, you know, this is going to be easy. It's not that much code. And then we start writing the code and then we find a problem with the code and we go down a rabbit path. And, you know, we really, really hone into one little specific scenario, but we have this mindset that we have to fix this because it's going to break the whole functionality, or we can't go without this. And sometimes you can't. But what happens is you spend unaccounted for time in that rabbit hole. And then when you come out of that rabbit hole, you think you declare victory, but you really, because you feel good because you've solved a problem, but you still have this much work in front of you, right? That you have to account for all the other stuff. And so, you know, you kind of become misguided on how much work is actually left. And then, you know, again, that falls to the end of the sprint. So yeah, estimation is very important. And we'll talk more about that. The next thing is what I call simplifying the focus. So, you know, if there's anything to take out of the Agile textbooks, it's that the goal is to have working software at the end of the sprint, right? Working software, period. Doing 30 different things is great, but if they're not contributing to working software, something you can deliver to your end users or to your product, then it doesn't count. It doesn't mean anything. Everything is about working software, right? If your test team spent, you know, half the sprint just, you know, moving to a new framework of testing, okay, that's might look great technically, but how is that contributing to the deliverables, working software? So simplifying the focus. And I think as a scrum master, as a team, you have to constantly remind the team of the focus, right? Anytime they're faced with a challenge that or something that kind of distracts them mid sprint, working software, get back to what we're supposed to do and deliver. If you have to make a decision to cut something out, that's better than not delivering anything at all and, you know, get something in the hands of your users. And if you really do have a close connection to your users, if you really are delivering something every sprint that is going to get in someone's hands, make sure it's something that is of value to them, right? And even though we do sprint planning and we prune our black backlogs and we should have product owners that are facilitating a lot of this, it's still up to the development team to make sure that they implement to that. So, stress that every day, working software. And that I think that also helps take the stress off the team a bit as well, right? Because they, every day they see this reminder, okay, all I have to do is work on what I'm supposed to work on and like recalibrate and clear my head from all the noise from yesterday. So that's number two. The next thing is what I call finding agile ambassadors. So as I mentioned in the beginning, you know, no, there's no such thing as a perfectly groomed agile team. You know, that understands how to do it, does it effectively, works well together. You know, and just you don't really need to do much. That just doesn't exist. That only exists in a textbook. You have to find who is the agile ambassador on your team, or multiple people that have done it before, people that are either passionate about it, or people that just have generally good practices in general. Maybe you have someone on your team who really is a good estimator, or someone who's really good at, being focused on their work, right? And, you know, delivering consistently, whatever velocity they have. Those are people that you want to tap into that can help share their experience and practices with the rest of the team. If you have a 5, 6, 10 person agile team, you know, you don't want the scrum master to be the only person really speaking and evangelizing and kind of proposing things. You really want this to be an organic discussion. You want people that are doing the work every day to be talking to each other. And that really starts with having ambassadors, people that are really passionate about it and that can create this collaborative culture, which is really at the heart of what agile is.
Yeah, it's a very good point.
Yeah. And next thing is the daily stand-up. So if there's any ceremony or best practice out of the textbook, it's really daily stand-ups and, more importantly, consistency with daily stand-ups. With my stand-up, that's the one thing I am religious, regimented about consistently. We don't miss a day. We don't move the time unless absolutely critical. You know, I used to have a stand-up with a team at 9 a.m. And people say, can we move it to 9:30? Can we do it at 10 today? I'm like, no, 9 a.m. I don't care what else you do the rest of your day. I mean, you know, you want to go and take an hour to get coffee or whatever you want to do. I mean, that's your deal. 9 o'clock is the stand up because it develops this habit and reiterates the importance of it. And this consistency, again, tells the team that this is our North Star. This is our purpose every day. Come to the stand up ready to discuss what it is that you did yesterday, what your plan is for today, right? It activates that brain cell. And by doing it consistently every day, people get the message, but they get trained. And if there's one habit to develop, it's that. How to report in a stand-up, be succinct, leave the stand-up with energy for the day, and hold it every day, okay? So, again, we can get well more into how to do a stand-up, but consistency, pick a good time of the day. Generally, in the beginning of the morning, as best as you can with a local team. With remote teams, it's a different story. They should have their own stand-ups. But it needs to be something that's consistent, and allows the team to grow organically. That is the daily stand-up, honestly, is the seed that makes the team grow. I can tell you, in working in organizations where we have, you know, multiple teams, and there's an agile team and a non-agile team that are working on the same, you know, project. And while both teams can deliver, you really see over time the agile team is far more collaborative, far more energized, far more nimble and flexible to deal with things. They're just naturally, they because of building these kind of good habits in place and understanding their focus and being focused. And it comes from, you know, the consistency with the stand-ups amongst other things.
Yeah. Yeah. And I totally agree. And I think of all practices, I think stand-ups are maybe the most important one because it develops, like you just said, it develops this habit or discipline of thinking through what you're going to be doing, right? Because if someone starts a day without knowing what they're going to be doing, right, it's not going to be a very productive day, right? And not being able to look back into the day and tell to yourself and to your own team what you have done. And sometimes it happens, you know, people get a writer's block and, you know, nothing is done. But my experience has been that with stand-ups, people are energized and self-encouraged to bring to the table something to show to the team, right? And also, I think another component that we maybe should mention is the mentioning blockers, right? Because we usually stand-up consists of three parts, right? What I'm going to be doing, what I was doing, what I'm going to be doing, and if I have any blockers, right? Time and time again, right? Someone mentions a blocker, there is always someone on the team who will say, hey, you know what? I think I might have an idea how to make it work, right? It's just this practice of stand-ups, this glue that keeps the team together and keeps it running on this, like running like a clockwork. It's sort of like a heartbeat of the agile team, if you want.
Exactly. And I think that's a great way to put it. It is a heartbeat. And I think you touch a good point as well as it energizes the team. You know, one thing that people that try to emulate agile teams miss, I think sometimes, is they say, oh, we're just going to have a daily stand-up every day. And I've seen this. You know, you have 20 people in a room and they call it a daily stand-up, but it's a daily status meeting. It's different. Yeah. And you compare the energy from a stand-up to a daily status meeting that looks the same, totally different. I mean, there's no energy because you have the difference is in like just what you said. It's empowering the team and creating that heartbeat. If I have 5 or 6 or 10 people in a room and they all are committed to each other and they're listening and they're engaged and they're helping and they know that the sum of their parts is really what is getting delivered at the end, they're going to be far more energized to help each other and work together. If you're just having a status meeting where some, you know, manager walks in and with a sheet and says, okay, Joe, did you do this? Jane, did you do this? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, just so that they can get this, effectively, they can micromanage and be confident that we didn't miss anything, right? Like treat them like they're kindergartners. That completely deflates the energy in the room, right? And nobody's gonna, and people don't pay attention. So that's I think it's such an important point and why it is so effective. Absolutely.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And those daily status meetings, I think, I'm still on the fence on the effectiveness of those. Right? Like you said, it does help to sort of keep the manager to maintain a big picture. But at the same time, the goal of the sprint is to lean in, get something done, get something out of it, put it in customer hands, right? In that sense, checking every day how things are going, right? Well, things may not be changing every day, right? And we don't expect them to change every day because our the size of this slice, the time slice is 2 weeks, right? In 2 weeks, we have to get together. We have to see what's happening, right? We have to do a demo, right? This is the prime time, right? But every day status meetings, I'm not sure. But certainly stand-ups is a great thing. What else?
Next thing is demos. So I think this is something I've played with and I found to be so effective, and I do them all the time. For every story, there should be an internal team demo. And so the demo serves, I think, multiple purposes, but fundamentally, one, it really builds this level of ownership, right? So the developer, the person working on their story, has some real direct connection to the actual functionality or whatever it's doing. They're not just writing code and throwing it over the fence or whatever, right? They actually get to share it with the team and get feedback and simulate what it's supposed to do. There's so many times that I've done demos where two things happen positively. One, you see the motivation of the team. They're really excited to share their work and really say what they've done and really get validated for it. And the second thing is that, you know, you're catching and providing feedback before it's truly marked as done, right? You're not just kind of letting it flow through the pipeline. It's like, well, wait a minute. Yeah, we implemented this, but did it really do what it was supposed to? It allows you to do real-time code reviews. It's not just static code analysis. You know, you're really building some good quality checks into the process by doing that, in addition to the motivators. So demos are very important. You should try as much as possible to have everybody on the team demo their stories when they're done, or before they're done, or whenever. Maybe not every story needs to have that. And if you're just one scrum master and it's hard sometimes, then you don't have to do every one. But it's great. And it's especially great for a younger team so that they build their confidence as well, and they get to share with their team and they get to... I think they get to understand more how things work. I think the other silver lining of an effective agile team is that they are really committed to the product. They are really committed and believers in whatever services they own. They're not just there to take a paycheck and deliver right code. They're really committed to it. And I've seen so many great ideas come out of that. And like you said, this collaborative spirit where one person on the team said, maybe if you did it this way, or here's something that might help us, or I was working on something similar that maybe I can learn from how you did this, or, all that kind of stuff. And I think it's just such a positive thing in general. And it also, in the same side, it works on effective communication, effective presentation skills, things that you want your agile team members to be able to build on anyway. So demos is the next one. Then the next thing is talking a little bit about retrospectives and planning. So as I mentioned, stand-ups are the primary ceremony that you absolutely need to nail. But retros and planning are still important and they should be done. But they should, in my opinion, they should only be done once the team has started to mature. Here's the reason why. Any team, goes through the normal forming process, right? You form, you storm, and then you norm, and then you really reach your potential. And for the most part, most teams are somewhere before the norming phase. They're somewhere between forming and storming, and oftentimes teams, may not stay together, at least agile teams may not stay together for really long periods of time. Or if they do, teams change, get new folks and whatever. So you may not really get to the full norming phase. And because of that, you're constantly working on improving the team and making sure that the culture is well established. Retros are good, and I think they should be held, but if you start focusing only on ceremonies in a two-week sprint, that's all the team will focus on, right? They won't really get some of the things we just talked about. You need to have time to absorb the most important things first. Yeah, it's like building blocks. You learn to walk first before you run. You know, you look walk first before you can dress yourself and do this and whatever, or whatever the analogies are. Retros, I think, will disrupt that flow of the team, right? If you're constantly changing or taking feedback from the team and feeding it back in, it can be distracting. So you may still want to do retros, but maybe you want to do them, you know, once a month, once every other month. Or as a scrum master, you want to gauge the team on when it is effective or not. Sometimes as a scrum master, you might just say, hey, look, let's try it this way. You got to kind of guide the team a little bit and give them a little structure most of the time. And so retros are really only good when people really know what is wrong or what they want different, not just a session to talk about what they don't like. So it's a little dicey. Planning is another one. Now, I would put planning pretty high. You have to have planning sessions, okay? I'm not saying you don't have them, but you need to maximize the purpose of those, right? In many organizations, you can't spend a full day just doing planning, right? Most people would want it to do it right. You should do that. That's not practical, right? Because usually it's the end of your sprint or the first day of the new sprint, and you don't really have a full day to burn with the entire team. So you still got to do planning, but you got to do it efficiently. And you got to think about, especially with remote teams, you got to think about, okay, how can I be most efficient and delegate to the team members to fill in the gaps on planning, right? Say, okay, here are the things we need to do this sprint. Let's all agree that this is not too much or not too little. And say, okay, now everybody go off and write their stories or fill in the stories, estimate, right? So you're dividing and conquering, not, you know, holding this large ceremony of planning. And again, I'm not saying these are both bad, but they have a place and they have a context. And, you know, if your team is very highly performing and doing well, then certainly go full force on that if you have the time for it. But use your discretion and don't sacrifice things that we talked about earlier, simplifying the focus of the team, daily stand-ups, estimation, etc.
Yes, yes. This is good stuff. And I totally agree on the retrospectives. And I also agree that the team needs to practice stand-ups, needs to practice estimates, needs to practice delivering something at the end of the sprint, demoing it. And once we have, or the team did it for quite some time, I don't know how many, you know, 3-4 sprints, right? Then they can start doing retrospectives, right? Then they may begin to polish the process, right? Because retrospectives are about polishing, right? When we are just starting, right? I think the most important thing is doing it, right? Not polishing, right? Because if we begin to polish too early, right? It can backfire, right? Because people are going to be, okay, I'm doing something, and there's something on the back of their minds. What if it's going wrong? It may pop up during a retrospective, etc., right? So I totally agree. I think retrospectives must be introduced. I think it's a good tool. I agree with you, and it needs to be introduced much later in the cycle. And with the planning, you had a very good point, right? With planning, we might do it once or twice as a team, right? Like this formal planning meeting, right? So that each member of the team understands what we are trying to get out of the planning, and they know what is expected of them when the planning happens, right? After this, especially in remote teams, especially distributed teams like these days, fanning out to the team, letting them do it in parallel and getting it together as a sprint plan, it's going to be, it can be much more efficient than, you know, putting everyone in the same room and, you know, having this long meeting. I totally agree.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I remember working with 3 remote teams at one point and being local with one team and having the other team on video conference. And literally to do a really full-fledged planning session, it took us a day and a half solid, and it was exhausting.
Oh, right? It's quite possible. It's absolutely possible. Yeah,
I mean, totally. Yeah. And then the last thing is like two things together, which is first, recognizing that most people on the team truly don't understand the value of Agile, right? Most people, when I say most people, I'm talking about, you know, your, you know, entry level, mid developers, sometimes senior developers. They hear it, they may like it, they may understand the practices, but they are not, at least on teams where they haven't practiced it diligently and with these good foundational skills, don't really understand the value of Agile, right? As much as you think they do and as much as you can throw them every textbook, they don't understand it until they really do it, until their software is consistently being pushed out and they're seeing that success and feeling that momentum. And so you can't just go into a team and say, okay, we're going to do X, Y, and Z, and you know every sprint we're going to do this, 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 and this, and just expect people to believe in it. They can practice, but they can't. You're not going to force belief on them. So recognize that and always be mindful of that. You're going to see a lot of deer in the headlights, and you have to like pause and let people like absorb that. And all the little subtleties that happen with team dynamics are going to happen. And then the other side of that is, okay, recognizing not everybody will understand, but at the same time, empowering the team to deliver. Empowering the team to deliver. So you as a scrum master or leader of the team, you always have to be putting the team in a position to accelerate and be successful. Not just unblocking them, not just helping them with tasks, but really empowering them. So, you know, for example, you may stress estimation, but say, okay, you told me it's two story points. I believe you. I don't care if somebody else told me they can do it in half the time. This is yours. You take it. You own it. But you own it, right? You got to do what you say you're going to do. So you're empowering them. You're holding the bar high and expecting things. And you're empowering the team to converge on what they need to do to solve problems, right? You're, you know, hopefully the team is working closely together and they can, you know, someone on the team feels comfortable enough because they built up this rapport and the daily stand-ups and whatnot to talk to another person and say, hey, you know, I'm really struggling with this particular piece. Any ideas on this? Or can you help review this code with me? Or maybe even pitch in and help me? And when the team feels empowered, when they feel like they have the will to be able to do that and they're going to be able to impact, they're going to be much more successful. They're going to be more willing to collaborate. So those are some of the key, I think, tenets and of effective Agile, practical skills. And I think, you know, these are things that people could start doing immediately.
Yeah, good stuff. And I wanted to add to your last point, which is good, on the empowerment. And I've seen it before that, especially with junior members of the team, when we start this practice, they may not get it, right? Because to them, they cannot relate it to anything, right? And the side effect of it is might look like a formality, right? So, and what I have done, and because this is the podcast for the engineering managers, right? I think when the practice starts and, you know, first sprints begin to roll, it's important to have those weekly one-on-ones with the team and especially junior staff and asking like, hey, did you get what you're trying to do? Do you have any questions? Do you have any concerns? Anything is bugging you that you want, let's talk about it, right? And this might help because especially with junior staff, they may not be just feeling comfortable to raise concerns in public settings, like in meetings or whatnot, right? But one-on-ones, I think, are super important, especially during that time. And I can tell that without this being able not to relate, senior folks who have, let's say, 10, 15, 20 years of experience. I remember my first software job was 30 years ago, I just realized, in 1990, right? We had a project, we did automation for outpatient clinics, right? We spent 6 months planning. We spent 6 months writing specs, agreeing them with the customer, multiple round trips and everything. And then we were recording for a year and a half. Right? So they did not see anything for a year and a half. Right? And we were recording in all directions at the same time. Right? Whatever, a small team of 10 people. Right? And then after a year and a half or closer to the over the period of the year, we started doing the demos, right? And we had so much feedback, right? That's right, this is wrong, you know, we didn't mean it and everything else, right? That's why, and now that we can put it in the customer hands like in 2 weeks, get immediate feedback and course correct. It's very powerful, right? I can relate because I've been on that side where of the waterfall, it's a full-blown waterfall, right? It cannot be more waterfall than this. And but with junior staff, I think it really makes sense to help them to answer those concerns and, you know, dig for them if you want. So Adam, you brought up 6 very important fundamental and foundational topics. And if I were building an agile team today, I would certainly feel far more comfortable knowing these important foundational techniques. And to recap, for our listeners, can you give us a checklist that engineering managers can use to self-check that they're starting their agile team in the right way?
Yes, absolutely. So we talked about a lot of really good stuff, and I think this is just the tip of the iceberg, but here are some effective agile practices that you can do. Number one, focus on estimation first. Encourage the team to be honest to their estimates, allow them flexibility in their estimates, but hold them accountable, right? And make that consistent sprint over sprint. That'll help coach them on good estimation. Number two, reduce the team noise and focus on what is only there right in front of them in the current sprint. A little bit of tunnel vision. You know, working software is the objective. Results-oriented deliverables. Number three, encourage an agile ambassadors to proactively work with folks on the team. Find the people who exhibit good habits or really are passionate about it, and encourage them to share with the team. Encourage them to be just be more interactive with the team. You know, build that web of knowledge and experience and culture. Number four, ensure you hold your daily stand-ups. Be consistent on the time it is daily. Hold it daily. Be consistent on the duration. Don't let them turn into design sessions. 15, 20, 25 minutes max. Don't deviate. Keep it, you know, if it's 9 a.m. Monday through Friday, do it every day. 9 to 9:15, 9:20. You know, and keep that habit and pattern consistent. Number five, encourage demos for all work completed. It will not only build camaraderie amongst the team, but it will build a level of ownership for every developer, everybody that's contributing to the sprint. And it'll really help them build the pride for the work they're doing and get early feedback. And number six, empower the team to deliver. Avoid micromanagement as best as possible so that the team feels empowered to focus only on what's in front of them and come up with the best solutions. And as a manager, a scrum master, kind of a leader, you are there to be practicing servant leadership and unblock the team as necessary and make sure they stay true to what was planned for the sprint.
Thank you, Adam. This is really good stuff, and I'm looking forward to more.
Thank you, Slava, certainly. And we got more good stuff on the way, so stay tuned.